Total Tuscany Podcast, number 16. Ciao, and welcome to another edition of the Total Tuscany Podcast. I'm Travis Justice, joined by my partner, fellow lover of Tuscany, who never gets sick and tired of talking about Tuscany. None of us can. Mr. Pat Capani. What's up, Pat?
Hey, Travis. I'm having a great day. How are you?
I could be having a better day. In fact, it might be one of those days where it's appropriate to go in the backyard, sit on the patio furniture, and have a good bottle of wine. But not just any bottle of wine. Not a French wine. Not a California wine. Not an Argentina wine. But, of course, an Italian wine. And more specifically, a Tuscan wine.
Yeah, Travis, everything we've experienced in Tuscany, the simpler, the better, the wines that we've been enjoying, we just find something that we like. But I think what we've both discovered is it's just fun trying something new and learning about these wines.
I am not a wine expert. One thing I do know is that I can't really pick up the smells or the certain fruits and stuff like that. I just know when I have a glass of wine, if it tastes good to me, that's all that really matters. I probably couldn't tell you what wine to pair with what food, but we do get asked a lot about wines. And in Tuscany, there are a lot of different wines. Basically, down to the regions, you can get a Brunello, you can get a Chianti Classico, you can get a Super Tuscan, but there's even off branches of those varieties. And that's why we have to call in an expert when it comes to wine. And our resident wine expert at TotalTuscany.com is John Fodera. He runs the website TuscanVines.blogspot.com and is our guest this week on the Total Tuscany Podcast. John, I got to ask you to start off with, you have one of the greatest passions and maybe hobbies that one could think of, and that is tasting lots of wine and lots of good wine. How did you start getting into wine?
It's a long, funny story, actually, and I blame it on my mother. When I was about, I don't know, 15 maybe, I was in a drum corps, and one of the kids who was also in a drum corps, he kept inviting me to go over to his house, and I didn't really know him, so my mother was like, go, you'll make a new friend. So I went over there and happened to pick up an issue of Bon Appetit magazine, and I don't know why I picked it up, and I took it home because there was an article in there about Italy, and I wanted to show my mother. And ever since that day, it was a little article in there that said, why should you build a wine cellar? And it just kind of stuck with me. And then there was an article in there about Pesto Genovese, and it just kind of went from there. So that's what I do. I blame my mother for sending me over there that night.
So it said, why should you build a wine cellar? I got to ask now, do you have a wine cellar at your house?
I do have a wine cellar in my house. I actually have two, so to speak. I have a Eurocave professional unit, which is temperature and humidity controlled, and then I have what would be described as a passive area in my basement, which isn't temperature controlled, but it stays pretty cool there.
All right, now I'm curious, how many bottles you got?
Oh boy, you know what? I don't even really know. Probably about 500.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
So we'll be visiting next week.
Absolutely. We could always do that. So take it down a couple notches.
TuscanVines.blogspot.com is your website. That's where you do wine reviews and recipes. And your last couple of posts have been about Brunellos. And I like the first line of your latest post. As many times that I can recollect, people have asked me, what's a good Brunello? Has anybody ever asked you, what's a bad Brunello? Because I don't think one exists, does it?
I don't think any. Well, I think I would say that they probably definitely exist. You know, maybe bad is not the right word, but there's definitely jumps in quality. You know, there are a lot of, I'm generally wary, and I hate to use price as a factor, but every once in a while I'll see a review for a wine that says, oh, you know, this Brunello, it's really nice, it's this, it's blah, 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 and it'll be, you know, $28, $29. So I'm like, oh, well, how can I not try one? Typically I go, I try it, I treat it nice, I take care of it, and I open it, I'm like, eh. You know, it's okay. It's a good wine. It's more like a heavy-duty Rosso di Montalcino than it is a Brunello. And I say, you know, well, if I'm buying Brunello, I want, you know, there's a certain number of things that I'm looking for when I'm buying that label. And, you know, sometimes when you go too inexpensive, you don't get that.
When it comes to wines in Tuscany, take us through, you got the Brunellos, you got the Chiantis, you got the Super Tuscans. What should be, you know, I like to think that myself, and I think Pat probably does too, I'm a basic guy. And that is, if it tastes good to me, that's all that really matters. I don't know if I can go through and get the smells.
That should matter.
Yeah. I mean, regardless of price point, that's what matters to me, is if it tastes good. But take us through kind of the Tuscan regions and what people should be looking for. In quality and taste and just the different styles of wine that you can find in Tuscany.
Right. I think the biggest problem that the average person who asks me questions, the biggest problem that they have is they're looking to find a wine. You know, they're looking for a Merlot. They're looking for a Cabernet. They don't understand that, you know, the old world labels their wines by the geographic region from where the grapes are grown. That's usually the first hurdle. So in Tuscany, regardless of where you are, the king is the Sangiovese grape. And that manifests itself in dozens of wines through myriad clones, whether it's Chianti, whether it's Vino Nobile, whether it's Brunello. They're in the Super Tuscans. You find it everywhere, even in Carmignano. They blend it with Cabernet, but there's always a good dosage of Sangiovese, and it has many different names. You know, it's Chianti, it's Brunello, it's Morlino, it's, you know, in Vino Nobile, it's Prunolo Gentile, but it's all Sangiovese. So they don't go out of their way to make it simple for people. But once you know it, it's pretty easy when you just know that you're looking at Sangiovese.
John.
You know, and Sangiovese has a tendency to be, you know, acidic when it's not ripe enough. But that acidity is what makes it fresh when it's done well. And that's what makes it pair so well with food. And you get a lot of the, you know, the floral aromatics and the, you know, you can get leathery and earthy notes with it. And then you get that bright, you know, cherry fruit. Sometimes it can be, you know, ripe black cherry. Sometimes it can be kind of, you know, tart or like a wild berry. And that's what I look for, and that's what makes it go so well with lots of different foods.
John, I want to ask you about the Super Tuscans so that our listeners pick up on that. But let's take a step back for a minute.
Sure.
From the Bon Appetit magazine and the wine, I think we took a jump to Tuscany. Why Tuscan vines? Why are you focusing there?
Well, you know, it was really, it wasn't exactly my intent, although my favorite wines from Italy have always typically been from Tuscany. I love a good Barolo or a Barbaresco from Piemonte. I have some Sicilian heritage, so I like to explore that area too. But I've always enjoyed the Tuscan wines the most. So I kind of named, that's how I kind of named the website. But it was never my intention to restrict it to just Tuscan wines. So I do, you know, cover wines from all over Italy. And, you know, typically in any given month, if you look on the site, I try to do a couple of recipes, maybe a feature article or a winemaker interview. And then the bulk of the reviews will be from Tuscany. But there'll be three or four other reviews in there from other regions in Italy as well.
Okay. All right. So focus now. We're in Tuscany. Super Tuscans. What is a Super Tuscan?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I don't really know that it has an answer. I actually think maybe a year ago or more, I actually penned an article on that on the blog. But for your listeners, you know, everybody has a different opinion, but to me, to earn that title, Super Tuscan, it has to be a superior wine. It has to be a top shelf wine. You know, the very first one was a wine called Tignanello, produced by Antinori, and it was 80% Sangiovese blended with 20% Cabernet. And when that wine was created, they were still using inferior red grapes and even white grapes in the Chianti Classico blend. And Antonori said, you know, this isn't good for Chianti Classico. It doesn't make, you know, good wines. I want to make the best wine I can, so I'm going to create this wine, and I'm just not going to call it Chianti, you know, because I just want to make a great wine. So that's how Tignanello was born, and that's kind of how the Super Tuscans were born. Now, that was a premium wine for Antonori, and he sold it at a premium price. And now you have, you know, producers today that they'll blend Sangiovese and Cabernet, but they'll do it, you know, not properly, so to speak, and they'll sell it for, you know, $8 or $10, and they'll call it a Super Tuscan. Well, it's really not a Super Tuscan. Not in my mind.
So would you say a Super Tuscan is more of an offshoot of a Chianti then? Is it closer to a Chianti than a Brunello?
It's definitely going to be... the majority of Super Tuscans are blends of something. It's usually Sangiovese, Cabernet, but there are plenty of Super Tuscans that are 100% Merlot. Red Agassi, Masetto, Galatrona, they all fit in there. There are plenty of Super Tuscans that are 100% Sangiovese. And it's funny because these producers, you know, they all followed Antonori, and they said, okay, well, if he's going to do it, I can do it too. So you've got, you know, La Pergola Torte, you've got Flacinello, Fontaloro. They're all 100% Sangiovese. And now that they changed the law and said that you can make Chianti with 100% Sangiovese, you don't need to put the white grapes in. You don't need to put those low-quality red grapes in. These producers could now turn around and label that wine Chianti Classico, but they've got so much built up in the value of the brand name that they just never have. So that's what I said. You know, it's hard to get, it's very easy to get confused sometimes, because when you have, you know, someone who's looking for a Cabernet or a Merlot, you almost have to kind of study the region a little bit to know, hey, this wine's 100% Sangiovese, or this wine is a blend. It's just something I've learned, you know, over 25 years of doing this.
You know, people hear the word Chianti, and you can go into a lot of wine stores or even a supermarket, and you'll see a Chianti. And we've talked about it several times on this podcast. It's not a Chianti to us unless it is a Classico and the Black Rooster. Explain to people what that Black Rooster means as far as a badge of honor in the Chianti region.
Yeah, I mean, the Black Rooster is the symbol of the Chianti Classico consortium. It's a consortium. It's just an association of growers. You know, the consortium is a quasi-governmental entity, and the producers can either choose to belong to that or not. Really, all it is when you've got a Chianti Classico, you've got grapes that are grown in what has been determined to be the premium region of the Chianti zone. So if you've got, I always explain it to people, like if you live in, you know, your county, and then that whole county might be the Chianti zone, and your specific town might be analogous to the Chianti Classico zone. So it could be that, it isn't that small, you know, per se, but that's the kind of analogy that you use. And there are so many other areas of Chianti. You know, there's Rufina, there's Colli Senese, there's Monter Spatoli, there's Chianti Classico. They're all within Chianti, but they're just not in Chianti Classico. Now, to my palate, I tend to agree with you. When I am looking for a Chianti, I typically go for a Classico. It just suits my palate a little bit better. And there are a few exceptions, but, you know, and they're not, that's not to say the other wines are not good. They are. They're just not my preference.
So when it comes to the wines that you have tasted and you may recommend on your website, How much, Pat and I have great stories of when we go to Tuscany, especially the first couple of times, we load up our suitcase and bring back as much wine as we can. And then we were like, well, that's just stupid because we can find a lot of what we drank over there over here. How much wine do you, that you review, that you taste, is available in the United States? And how much is it? I mean, is there a lot of good wine that we can't find here?
Well, I'm very lucky to be in the New York, New Jersey market, where I think I probably have a rich selection available to me. But if I attend a trade event, you know, when I attended Benvenuto Brunello back in January, I tasted almost 70 wines that day.
Oh, you were hammered.
Yeah, you got to spit. You got to spit, otherwise you're in trouble. But when you do that, you know, you find things at big tastings like that that are not imported. You know, there are producers that are there that are looking to be imported. But if I review a wine on my website and it's not imported into the U.S., I note that. So if it doesn't say that, then I've gotten it here. Either I've purchased it myself or it's been a sample sent to me for review.
John, if you review the same wine and you're enjoying that glass of wine in New Jersey or in Tuscany at the vineyard, how do you adjust for the fact that, well, our experience is the wine just tastes better when you're sitting there in Tuscany. How do you account for the differences
there? The first time I was in Tuscany, I was there with a good friend of mine who works for a prominent Tuscan winery, and we were at the estate having lunch, and he just ordered, he asked him to bring out, you know, a Rosso di Montalcino. And I don't remember if I had had that vintage, but I had had that Rosso di Montalcino a couple dozen times, probably here in the country, in the United States. And we were sitting there having lunch, and I said to him, I'm like, wow. I said, this might be the best Rosso di Montalcino I've ever had from you guys. Mm-hmm. And he just looked at me and he said, everything tastes better in Italy.
I would agree with that.
So I think it's an issue of it's just closer to home. I mean, no matter what care is taken, and a lot of care is taken, you know, the wine is still driven from central Tuscany to the coast, where it sits on a dock, gets loaded on a boat, shipped across the ocean, where it gets unloaded and sits on a dock, put on a truck that may or may not be refrigerated, you know, taken to a distributor and then taken to a retailer till it finally gets to your house. You know, is there a certain degree of, you know, travel shock? There probably is. But I also wouldn't discount, which I think is kind of what you were getting at, I wouldn't discount the environment either. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're sitting there on a pergola and you're looking over a vineyard and, you know, the food is great and you're relaxed and it just tastes better.
Now, I actually mean this to be a serious question, though it's going to be kind of funny. And that is, when we sit in Italy and drink wine, and probably more than we should bottle-wise, we've never woken up with a headache. If I drink a California wine or a wine produced here in the United States, one bottle will give me a massive headache in the morning. Is that all psychology, or is there something in the way it's produced, bottled, alcohol level content that would factor that? Because I hate the headaches.
I think, well, if you're definitely talking about a California wine, I think the part of the issue could be the increased sugar in the wine and the resulting higher level of alcohol. I will say that culturally, especially when I'm in Italy, I tend to drink a lot more water when you're drinking wine. That helps too. And I have never really gotten a definitive answer. I know some people have swear up and down that in Italy they never get headaches, and over here they do, because the wine in Italy doesn't have sulfites.
Well, so this isn't just us. We're not just imagining this.
No, I think it's all part and parcel of a bunch of different things, because I think that sulfites occur naturally in the winemaking process. So the wines in Italy have sulfites. But when the wines are shipped here to the United States, the the ATF, the Bureau of Alcohol and Firearms, they mandate a certain level of sulfites as a preservative. So wines destined for the United States have additional sulfites added beyond what occurs in Italy.
So we're really not getting what we purchase. So if we try a wine when we're in Italy, we try to find it here, it's going to be different.
Yeah, it could potentially be different. Now, I don't know how that factors into the flavor. And like I said, it hasn't really been proven to me whether the increased sulfites affects the flavor of the wine and or, you know, your headaches or dehydration or anything like that. But the one thing I was thinking about doing actually this trip, because I'm going back in about a week or so, I am going to try to find a bottle of wine there that I know that I can purchase here. I'm going to carry it home and let them sit side by side in my wine cellar for a month or two. I'm going to label the one that I got in Italy, and then I'm going to try them side by side with the same meal, probably as a blind format so I'm not prejudiced, and then I'm going to see whether I can tell the difference between the two.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it would be an interesting article, so that's a little preview of a thought that I've had.
Mm-hmm. So, John, how many times do you have the privilege, the luxury to go back and enjoy the wine in Tuscany?
Well, this is only going to be my second trip since 2007, so I don't get back as much as I would like to. Logistically, it's not easy to do when you're juggling all the things we juggle with a full-time job and kids that play sports and do a bunch of other things. But hopefully it'll be a little bit more frequent if I'm lucky.
Now, you're also into the food. What do you like the more, wine or the food? Because you have a lot of recipes on the website as well.
I once had a, back in the day, there was this old wine discussion group on a forum on the internet. And there was a thread that was going about how often do you drink wine? And this one guy replied, "Wine is food. I try to eat every day." But, to me, I don't necessarily drink wine every day, but I do appreciate the sentiment because to me, it is food and it belongs on the table. And to me, wine and food just go together. So, I mean, my love for wine probably started long before I really got into cooking and things like that. If I'm making a nice meal now, it's got to have a good bottle of wine with it.
So when Travis and I were visiting Tuscany, we stumbled upon grappa.
We had no idea what the hell grappa was until we got there.
And for our
did
listeners.
Did you like it?
I loved it.
Yeah.
Do you like it?
I used to absolutely hate it. And it's definitely an acquired taste. And, that the same friend of mine who works for the winery that I was talking about before, he said to me, he goes, "Oh, you got to put it in the freezer." He goes, "Keep it in the freezer because you can't drink it room temperature." So I stuck a bottle in the freezer, and that's how I kind of got used to it. It's nice when you come in, in the winter, maybe after snow shoveling, but you can only kind of have a little bit.
Yeah, it's not like you go through a bottle a night. It's one of those that just sits there for a couple of years.
I'm lucky if I finish a bottle a year, which the bottle I have in my freezer now is probably at least a year old.
So you're getting ready to go to Tuscany. Are you going to focus? Are you going to go all around the region? How long are you going to be there? Where are you going to stay? And what wineries or in what wine are you looking to try?
I've got a 2-week trip planned, only a week of which is going to be in Tuscany. I've got several winery appointments and tours scheduled with Monte Raponi and Chianti Classico, Castello Bonfi, Il Palazzone and Brunello. I'm meeting a winemaker for dinner one night, and the one wine I'm actually looking, when you mentioned about bringing wine home, I hardly ever bring wine home because there's not so much that I have difficulty finding. But the one wine I'm looking for this time is Cecchi's Cuevo. And I've written about Cuevo recently on the site, And the 2010 is available in Italy now. It's not available here. And that is an extremely limited wine, very difficult to find in this country. And I tasted the 2010 at the Gambaroso tasting, which it was Tre Bicchieri this year, and it was absolutely fabulous. So I'm hoping to get right to that estate and pick up some bottles to try while I'm there and a couple to bring home at least.
All right, before we let you go, if you were to recommend one bottle that we can get here in the United States, one bottle for everybody to try, what would that be?
One bottle of Tuscan wine.
Yep.
Oh, boy. I would say a beautiful wine that I think would have broad appeal and can probably be purchased for under $20. That should be relatively available would be Monterapone's Chianti Classico. The winemaker's a real nice guy. Everything is done in the traditional way, and he's one of the few producers of Chianti Classico that, although he doesn't use the white grapes, he still uses the other red grapes. There's no Merlot in his Chianti. There's no Cabernet in his Chianti. It's a Classico natural wine in his own description, and he does a really, really good job with it.
Excellent. John, just lots of good information. I think we could go for another half hour, but we know you're a busy guy. And I tell you what, after your trip, after you do your blind taste test, maybe we'll have you back and kind of review your article and give us an update on the difference between a bottle purchased here and a bottle purchased in Italy.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting to see. I would love to do that. You know, it's been great chatting with you guys, and I'm glad you thought of me.
I will say this: today's podcast was educational. I learned a lot from John.
Very interesting, and he confirmed something that you and I have been suspecting all along: this headache thing.
Either that, or I just thought I was a major lush in here in the States.
Well, that's true, but
and I'd heard the sulfate theory before, mm-hmm. but I would also agree with him. When we are in Italy, and you'll find this when you make your first trip, or if you've been there before, you may have noticed, is that you do drink a lot more water. And
well, you drink a lot more wine, too.
Yeah, you drink wine, but I find myself going back and forth between water and wine. Here, I just kind of, you know, pour a bottle and that's all I drink, but I drink a lot of water, especially carbonated water when we're in Italy. Mm-hmm. So that may have a factor in as well, but that was very educational to know that, okay, we're not the only ones that get the headaches.
Yeah, and we need to have John back on, and I would like to hear more about his experiment and his most recent trip.
Yeah, because it's going to be very enlightening for him. He's going to try a lot of different wines, and he's going to have a lot to bring back and give that blind taste test of a bottle he purchases in Italy and the same bottle he purchases here in the United States. So we'll have John back probably in a month or two to get his feeling of that blind taste test, and if there really is a difference between a bottle you buy in Italy and one you can buy here in the United States. Hope you found today's Total Tuscany podcast entertaining, educational. Feel free to tell a friend about us. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or at Stitcher. If you're not following us on the social media channels, please do so. You can find us on Facebook as well as Twitter. So we'll be in touch throughout the week on the social media channels. For Pat Campagna, I'm Travis Justice. Everybody have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week on the Total Tuscany Podcast.